Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever. It was a listicle that was put together by Empire Magazine back in September 2016. Every week we watch a film from the list and then we talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K and I'm joined by...
Ben Arrington.
And today's film is The Devil's Backbone. Should we quickly talk about the list itself first?
The top 50 Empire best horror movies.
Yeah.
How old is this list? That was my interest. That's maybe a good point.
So the list itself was put together in September 2016, put together by some film reviewer type people. They must be very clever. They probably studied film at university, I imagine. They're the people in the know. So that this list, and they said these are the best 50 horror movies ever. So it's got to be right. It's got to be the good list to go.
Read through the entirety of the list, Luke?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Do you agree with it entirely? Are there any in there where you've gone, what on earth?
No.
Maybe.
No,
I don't think so.
I'm quite happy that we picked this list because we had another list. It was 75. And there's a few on there that I was like, it's a bit of a smelly one.
Yeah. There's always a film or two on a list like this where you're just like, that has just been put in there for a completely unknown reason, just to show off. Or, you know, hey, this movie that no one else has seen, which is definitely one of the best ones. Hey, have you guys seen it?
Yeah. I like this list because this list has got it's got stuff from when I was a kid and watching horror movies and stuff. It's got Scream, and that's like one of the first horror movies. It's got like Nightmare on Elm Street and those sort of late 80s, early 90s films. But it's also got stuff from like the 1930s, which I can't say I'm probably going to enjoy that much. But I'm still quite interested to see what they were like.
Yeah, especially if they've made this list, you do want to kind of think, well, what's going on in this film that makes it one of the best? What's going on in it?
Yeah.
Is it Killer Cats or something?
Yeah, The Cat People, whatever it's called. And we don't own that film, but it's on YouTube. So I guess we're just going to have to...
Wait a minute, Luke, you don't own Cat People? a film fan. You call yourself a horror film fan and you don't own Cat People.
Have you got the original reel of it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I had to beat up a couple of cats for it.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. So, The Devil's Backbone. This is the part of the show where we say, what the fuck is The Devil's Backbone? There will be spoilers as well in this show, I imagine.
Yeah, it's going to be spoiler heavy from, I'm assuming, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're gonna really tear it apart. So yeah, spoilers from the get go. We're not gonna go. Yeah,
who directed the film?
It was the legendary Guillermo del Toro. Now I think I'm saying that correctly. Spoilers that he directed it.
Yeah.
Spoiler. I always wait for that bit to see what the director is, and that's the biggest twist of the film.
Oh, gosh.
I can't believe it.
Oh, so that he's pulled a Shyamalan with that name.
He's pulled a Shyamalan. Should we read out just a little brief? So The Devil's Backbone is a 2001 Spanish-Mexican gothic horror film written and directed by Guillermo del Toro. I know I've said that already, but, you know, let's say it again.
I think you're pronouncing his name better than I will.
Why don't we just call him GDT?
I was going to call him Gil.
Gil.
the guy from The Simpsons. You know, the... Oh, man. That guy.
Do you think GDT is a little bit disrespectful?
Sounds like a wrestler. And
it does sound like a good wrestler.
Yeah, I like to think of my filmmaking heroes, I guess, as the lonely characters from The Simpsons rather than muscle-bound wrestlers.
It sounds like a wrestling move, actually, the GDT.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
It sounds like a painful one.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a joint move. It's like a Dudley Brothers sort of... what was that one called? Were they like...
The 3D.
3D, that's the one, yeah.
3D. Yeah,
through a table. Okay. So Empire had this to say about this film. The male companion piece to Gil's later female-centric Pan's Labyrinth. The Devil's Backbone is a classic ghost story set in an orphanage during the Spanish Civil War. Like Pan, it's explicitly political, and there's a clever metaphor at work comparing ghosts to unexploded bombs, which we'll talk about. But it's also less fantastical than its successor, an elegant supernatural yarn that compares favourably to the classics like The Innocents and The Haunting. So, have you seen this film before?
No, I haven't seen this film before. I think it might be one of the only ones of old GDT. I'm running with GDT now, I'm afraid. It might be one of his only films that I haven't seen.
Wait, should it be...
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
Sorry. Yeah, go on.
Did I say that wrong?
I thought it was GTD, but it's not, is it? It's DT. Okay, go on, sorry.
Practice that, Luke, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, because his first film, Kronos, I've seen, but I saw it a long time ago, and I don't think I even knew he directed it, so I don't really remember too much about it, but I'm pretty sure the only other film that he directed that I haven't seen is The Devil's Backbone, which I've seen it now.
Nice.
I've seen it.
You finished it. Collected them all, mate.
I completed it, mate.
I haven't seen Kronos. And after seeing this, I've got to say, I really do want to watch Kronos at some point. Because this is like his Spanish Civil War trilogy. So there's Kronos, this, The Devil's Backbone, I forgot what it was called, and Pan's Labyrinth. And I love Pan's Labyrinth. And this was a great film as well. So I'm really interested to watch Kronos.
Yeah, I mean, Pan's Labyrinth is, you could tell, you know, where the transition has gone from Kronos to Devil's Backbone to Pan's Labyrinth, like everything he must have been learning as a director, especially if it was like a Spanish Civil War trilogy, because it does get more fantastical and sort of the stuff that he introduces, say, for example, in this film, just gets dialed up a notch for something like Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, I mean, Pan's Labyrinth is coming on, like, it's later on the list as well, so we will watch that at some point. But... So this is a gothic horror film. I watched this with Kat, and we were like watching it, and we were like, "Is this a horror film?" Like, yeah. it's a bit of a genre mix, and it's more of a fantasy film first and foremost.
It's a fantasy film with horror elements, and I think one thing I thought about it was that if the horror elements were taken out of the film, it would still be a good film.
Yeah,
it wouldn't, like, you could get rid of all of the horror elements, all of the moments that were supposed to be sort of chilling and stuff, and it would still work as a film. A fantasy film, maybe not so much, maybe like obviously a drama, but yeah, it didn't feel like a horror film really at all.
Guess how many jump scares it had in it. So when you think of like horror movies nowadays, a 100 jump scares, because that's how they sort of get you. I counted. Yeah. How many did you count, if any?
Well, possibly one, yeah. Maybe.
There was one. Well,
maybe two. Maybe two.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's one that I'm thinking of that wasn't even that blaring sort of thing. It was just a little like a subtle jump scare. And that's when like the keyhole and the boy looks through the Santi looks through the keyhole.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that, but there's another bit where I think where Santi, the ghost boy, sort of like grabs Carlos and sort of pulls him towards him. And that was sort of like a little bit of a jolt. But yeah, unfortunately, modern horror films do kind of go for the old jump scare. Do you know what I mean? It's just loud noise, isn't it? It's just a massive loud noise. I mean, you jump at a loud noise in any film.
It's effective, though. It does get you like startle motors going. I'm sure that's a technical
term. Yeah, sometimes.
There.
But I think it does feel like a cheap scare sometimes. You're a bit like, oh, God, yeah, that's made me jump, but I'm annoyed because, you know, I want this sort of... If there's no tension really anyway, it's just a bit quiet and then suddenly it's loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to scare you, but that's not because of the film's atmosphere. That's not because of anything really, is it? So.
Yeah, yeah. I figured we could do this on every film, like do a little jump scare count. So, I mean, I've got to say, the thing I first want to talk about with this film is the like the bookends, like the intro sequence that loops around to the outro sequence. I thought it would it made the film... Like, I absolutely love those intro and outro sequences. Like, what is it? There's like a, it's like a visual art film. There's like little, beautiful little sequences and the music's lovely. And then like, what does the guy says? What is a ghost? Which is pretty much like the thesis of the film. Like what is a ghost? And it sort of.
I've got the quote here if you want me to read it out, Luke.
Yeah, go
for it. So this is every intro. Shall I read it all? Shall I just read a snippet?
Read a snippet.
So it's, what is a ghost? A tragedy condemned to repeat itself time and time again. An instant of pain, perhaps. Something dead which seems to be alive. An emotion suspended in time. Like a blurred photograph. Like an insect trapped in amber.
Yeah. And then is that the whole visual metaphor there with Santi in that like orange water.
I hated the look of that orange water, man.
Yeah, it didn't look nice. It's like
nice.
Lipton's iced tea or something, but
I'd take a bath in Lipton's iced tea, but I would not take a bath in the horrible, murky, yellowing depths of
dead boy
of
water.
A dead child.
Yeah,
dead boy water coming soon.
Well, I was wondering, like, why is it so yellow? Like, is that the toilet water or something? Because
it was like some sort of like cistern. I don't know. It was just
that's grim.
It was just horrible.
That bit was
so
good.
Should we put some context?
To the
film. So it's essentially is about a 12-year-old boy who goes to an orphanage. His dad's died in the Civil War. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he kind of gets abandoned and sort of like left there on this orphanage with loads of other kids who you're assuming are, obviously orphans, but like maybe like from casualties of the Civil War as well. And the orphanage is run by an older woman, a doctor, and then a janitor, who is he was an orphan as well, at some point previously. So it's almost like the kids kind of do look up to him in a way, but not in like a older brother sort of mentality. He's a right bastard sort of way. So they're obviously a little bit terrified of him.
Was his name Jacinto or something like that?
Jacinto.
Yeah.
So he's clearly got a plan to get hold of some gold, which is being stashed at the orphanage in a big safe. The gold is something to do with the Spanish Revolution, I assume. They're sort of helping.
I think they're funding the rebels. I don't know much about Spanish Civil War, but I think they're funding the rebels. I think the school itself, the orphanage, is actually just a front for them funding their rebel sort of allegiances. And then throughout the film, there's like I feel like there's like a constant fear that they're going to be found out and they're going to come and they're just going to kill all the kids or do whatever they do. But
kill the kids.
Kill the kids.
the doctor... witnesses like a sort of moment where some of the sort of Spanish soldiers kill some of the rebels in front of him.
Yeah.
So he sort of sees it there in black and white, what could happen essentially if he does get found out.
Yeah. And then they do find out, right? Oh, that okay. So that's like towards the end of the film. That's like Act Two. They fear that they're going to find out, so they try and get all the kids together, and they're going to leave the school. And at the same time, Jacinta's like, "I'm going to get me some gold."
He loves a bit of gold.
Yeah.
Who would have thought it?
Yeah.
But he's involved with some shady characters as well. So obviously he's betraying the people of the orphanage just so he can get his hands on some gold. But yeah, exactly. This is quite a good plot for a film without needing the supernatural elements. I mean, I understand why the supernatural elements are in there. First of all, it's Del Toro. So it's kind of his bread and butter with the ghost stories and stuff like that. But what do you think the addition of there being... So there was a boy who was killed accidentally. Santi was killed accidentally.
Yeah. But he was like hurt accidentally, wasn't he? But then he killed. So Jacinto, it basically you reveal throughout the film, you think that one of the orphans, this kid called Jamie, is the killer of Santi, who's the ghost who's been haunting the school. And throughout the film, you're constantly thinking that that's going to be the case. But then right at the end, the big reveal is that it's actually Jacinto, who's the janitor. And Santi caught him trying to get into the safe. He tells him not to tell anyone, pushes him into a wall, cuts his head open. The visual effects on that are great, I thought, when he's a ghost and he's got like the blood coming out of his head.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he...
He's got like a cracked head as well, cracked.
Yeah. Ball. I don't think he really needed to kill the kid because he was probably going to be okay because he's still alive, right? Maybe just like mentally damaged or something. But he like ties him up and chucks him into the depths of the water.
Yeah. So clearly he does fear getting found out. Maybe he just fears that he's not going to be able to get his hands on that gold. How many times did he try and get into the safe though? He's not a very good safe cracker. What was his method of trying to get into the safe? Just wiggle a key about. Oh no, I can't get in. I'm just going to stare at it for a while. You must have tried at least four or five times to get into that safe.
This is
get a professional in. Yeah, pay someone to do it. Oh, you can have a bar of gold. There's loads of them in there. You can have one of the bars of gold if you get me all the rest.
This is before eHow, so it wasn't like you could Google it and get on there and go, okay, here's the four-step guide.
Well, what we understand is that the orphanage is absolutely miles away from anywhere else as well, so so there's no way really. They've got one vehicle, they've got one like car like between all of them to get them somewhere if they need to get somewhere, and apparently it's like well over a day's walk, so the rest is civilization.
Yeah,
so I guess that's a nice sort of, that sort of like shows you that they're quite cut off from the outside world, so that's again, that's always quite a good element in horror films when you're like sort of trapped somewhere or sort of cut off from the outside world in that way.
Yeah, and that's that happens in Pan's Labyrinth as well, and Crimson Peak as well, because they're in that house.
Yeah,
and she's like, and the main character in that is American, but she's trapped in England. God bless her.
So there's all the fear of like isolation, and obviously the main character Carlos doesn't really think that he belongs there. He kind of thinks that they're stopping off for a while, and then he kind of gets abandoned by the guardian, the person who'd taken over from after his dad had been killed. So obviously he'd been completely abandoned. So again, isolation, surrounded by a bunch of kids who are he befriends a few of them at the start, but obviously a few of them are a little bit nasty to him.
Yeah, especially Jamie, the bully character, because they're just planting the seeds there that he's a killer. Don't mess with him,
he's a killer,
he's a killer.
But then Carlos tries to like befriend him rather than like sort of.
Yeah, I was smiling quite a bit when they all got there. They were all friends and they were like sharing comic books and stuff.
I
was like, he isn't too bad actually. He's all right.
They were thinking about doing a comic book collaboration at one point as well, weren't they? He's like, you draw the comics, I'll write the stories. He was piss off, mate.
Yeah,
I'm not interested.
Last bit of independent storytelling. I like it.
Exactly. Yeah, but it was like the opposite. Don't. They weren't combining their forces. They were strictly staying apart with that. Bill.
Yeah. Okay. So, Well, I mean, then you, I guess we need to talk about the explosion. You've got here that explosion, spelled D-A-T, explosion. That's exclamation mark.
Yeah. So obviously the film kind of like builds with this sort of paranormal ghost sort of milling about. What's he doing, really? He's just milling about, Santi, and he's just...
Just keep saying, people, many will die. It's like...
He will die. He knows the explosion is coming.
Yeah. But, and so we've got to say there's like a giant bomb in the middle of the orphanage that fell down from the sky. It's like, I don't know what kind of bomb it is. It's a big rusty one.
A big one.
It's a big old bomb, and it's trapped right in the middle of the courtyard. And
but it didn't explode.
But they sort of give you an impression that it will do at some point. And then the ghost is like, Santa's like, ooh, Minnie's going to die, you know. And I guess I assumed he was talking about the bomb. Man. Yeah.
So obviously they treat the bomb as like, a lot of the kids are quite fascinated with the bomb. They kind of like, sort of, they listen to it. They say they can still hear it ticking. And they call the bomb a her as well, which I thought was quite interesting. It really
didn't notice that.
Yeah, they called. There was a couple of times that you could still hear her ticking, and they were listening. Just to see.
I like how they're all boys and they've demonized women already.
yeah. Women are just a bomb ready to go off. Why did the guys at the orphanage, like the adults, not put some sort of barrier around that bomb? Come on, kids, don't go anywhere near this bomb. Yes. Put some tape around it. Health and safety.
Why is there no women as well? Like no girls? Like, do you not get girl orphans? Is that not something that happens?
Well, I guess boys only orphanage or girls only orphanage, probably a lot more back in the day. What was it, 1939? Is that what we're saying? Some in the 30s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably boys only orphanage. But yeah, you still get a good representation, I guess, from female characters, because Carmen, what would you say she is? The headmistress?
Yeah, so she's... there's a whole other side story here with the headmistress and the doctor-teacher guy. It's like a love story sort of thing happening there. You've got more of Del Toro's influence.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So showing with her wooden leg, her like metal leg, it's very Del Toro in the sort of he likes his mechanisms and cogs and
He does
intricate steampunk esque sort of accessories and whatnot, and there's a bit of that.
So she's had a leg off.
The doctor guy loves her, but she's having it off with the janitor, who's also having it off with the Conchita.
Having it off with everyone in there.
Yeah.
He's having it off with... So the janitor's having it off with Carmen, the headmistress lady, but she doesn't want him to kiss her. So, you know, it's strictly a scenario going on there. They've got an agreement. It's strictly a sexual-only scenario.
He's trying to sex the gold right out of her, I believe.
Yeah, but, he is. He's going, if I sex you, will you give me the old... give me the key to the safe. Metaphor.
Yeah.
There you see, key to the safe.
Yeah.
Gold.
It was weird because that safe was very much open to him.
He cracked that safe fairly easily. I mean, he was a master safe cracker in that scenario.
He's more of a crook than like, a safe. Just
also, because she said, this is the last time we're doing this. And he was like, yeah, all right. And about 30 seconds later, they started having it off again.
Yeah.
So clearly, she can't resist his charms.
Once you know the code to a safe, though, it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't change the code. You just do the same numbers and tickle the same digits in a...
easy return access, you know, straight back in there.
Yeah. Okay. So then you've got the doctor guy who, by the way, why is it called the Devil's Backbone? Like, I understand what it refers to, but I don't understand why the film's called that. Apart from the fact that it's got like a ghost creepy name.
Well, so it refers to spina bifida, is that right? We understand. And there's a conversation the doctor has with the little boy.
I've got some trivia later on for that.
Spina bifida trivia.
Yeah.
That's my favourite type.
Okay.
How did you know?
Yeah, go on. So the doctor's got his...
Yeah, the doctor has a conversation with Carlos and shows him a little fetus in a jar and says that the liquid in this jar with the fetus who's got an old wobbly spine... I sell this in the town to people to cure their ailments, and you know they love a bit of it. It's got rum in it or whatever, and it's just. And then he has a swig, which.
Yeah, but why is the film called that? Like surely it should be called like the dead kid in the basement, or you know,
maybe there's we've missed some sort of undercurrent. We've missed some sort of narrative structure that, you know, maybe that scene was more pivotal than we gave it.
We didn't give
it was a throwaway.
Yeah. I guess now I'm thinking about it. So Carlos and Santi is like floating in orange water himself. And what's his name? The doctor did say it only exists if you believe in it. So don't drink from this spina bifida water unless you believe in ghosts, or it will make you believe in ghosts, or something along those lines. So maybe there's something there.
Relatable.
Yeah.
You know? It's a relatable story.
Yeah. So coming to towards the end then. The actual horror bit for me is right at the end where the kid, I love this bit, like so the kids they basically so Jacinta's like blown the school up, basically.
We did mention the explosion. So yeah, Jacinto calls an explosion just because he's a horrible bastard. And
I'm a really horrible bastard.
He's a really horrible bastard. Well, he calls an explosion just with a load of explosives. That was just like
gas canisters and stuff.
Gas canisters, yeah. Which someone tries to put out just with a sheet at some point.
Kat said the same thing.
No, not the gas canisters explosion.
Yeah. Oh, and then she blows up herself. I remember that.
Yeah. A lot of people died in this explosion. Jacinto, you bastard.
A lot of kids.
Not only have you killed a kid by smashing his head in and then chucking him in some water, but now you've killed a load of kids and some adults too.
And like,
and his love interest, the young lady.
Oh yeah, I didn't see why he had to do that. But I guess like that sort of cements. Oh, this guy is a bastard.
But I think we kind of
stabbing his own like. There must be not be that many pretty girls in that part of town. And why are they stabbing like the only one?
Yeah, that's like shooting yourself in the foot right there, isn't it? That is cutting off your nose to spite your face because he's done himself a right mischief.
Yeah.
There. With the old knife in the belly.
Man, it's harsh that bit. So he blows up a few kids to try and get into the safe. And he also blows up like one of the only remaining teachers who actually cares about the educational system, which I think just shows it's a bit of a protest thing there to because he doesn't like the current educational system, I imagine. And then he kills the headmistress.
Extreme protest.
he kills the headmistress, and then there's no gold. Where the hell's the gold? I've just thought, where did he ever find the gold?
Yeah, he finds the gold. He finds after the explosion, he goes off for a while. Then he comes back with his heavies, and his heavies are sort of there to help him look for the gold. And then he does happen to find some bars. But then his heavies think he's full of shit, and they go, see you later, Jacinto, have it. And he goes, oh, all the more for me. And then he ties the gold in like a little thing around his waist, and then that, I'm assuming that.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. That's like a plot point as well. Okay.
And then the boys surround him, Lord of the Flies style.
This is the horror bit for me. He locks the boys away, and then they get out. One of the kids breaks his foot, which is that bit is like one of the most horrific bits in the film. When he like trips on his ankle, snaps or skewiff. And then they get these sharpened sticks, and they start just like stab it. There's just something so horrific about that idea of them just puncturing his like skin over and over until he falls into the water.
He falls into the horrible spine a bit for the water, into the cistern water, and then the ghost of Santi, the boy he killed, comes and drags him down into the depths.
It does look a bit like he's just trying to cuddle him in the film.
He is, just having a nice little cuddle.
Yeah. Thanks for setting me free from this horrible place.
Yeah, so I'm assuming because he was killed in cold blood, he was lurking around the orphanage until he got his revenge. Maybe he was acting as some sort of warning for the boys, forewarning of what was going to happen because Jacinto was still about. Maybe he just liked the orphanage. He loved it right now.
Yeah, yeah. Old Santi. Santiago. Old
Santi.
Okay, and then that's the film. Oh, no, yeah, so what's his name? Falls in the water, gets a nice cuddle from Santi, and then he drowns. And then the kids, everyone's dead at that point. All the adults are dead, and the kids just have to walk for like 24 hours to get to the nearest town. But no one's going to want him. And one of the kids is bleeding to death. The one who doesn't talk is bleeding to death. And has like the other has like a snapped ankle. He ain't making it. They're probably going to have to eat him on the way to town for sustenance.
Yeah.
And then they'll get to Conchita, eat her as well. The real horror starts after the war. I think that's the whole message.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's probably it, yeah. That's what we missed. After the film ends, it just descends into, horrible madness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and obviously the doctor dies as well, succumbs to his wounds. He gets, after the explosion, he just gets a bit of shrapnel in him. Mm. And he's like, oh, God, this shrapnel hurts a bit. And then he ends up just sat in a chair and dies.
Yeah, and then it turns out that the ghost, he was narrating the bookend intro and outro. It turns out the ghost in question was not Santi after all. It was him.
Yeah.
Who, his thing was he wanted to protect the children or protect the youth or something, I don't know.
So he wanted to protect the kids. And I think, he did that. So hopefully both the ghosts of the story are finally at peace. And that's it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of ghosts, they were like, the ghosts were lovely, weren't they? In a horror film, the ghosts, they weren't trying to do anything bad. They were just, they were nice people. horror elements, not too many.
No, I think the sticking of the pig style, Lord of the Flies style bit, that was the most horrific bit for me. But that could just be my deep-seated fear of being stabbed by a load of young kids.
do you ever go down like your local spa or something? You see a group of kids sort of like loitering outside, and you're like, oh, they ain't got sharp sticks, and they're gonna puncture me to death.
I shout Santi no, and then run away.
does that work?
It baffles them. It gives me a little bit like a room to get away.
And then you walk out a spa with a four-finger Kit Kat and just eat it.
Yeah. So we've come to the trivia part of the show. So I've got like 5 points. You have to say if they are true or false. One of these we may have already spoken about it. So. I think you're probably getting that one right. Okay, number one. Old GDT, has said that this is his favourite movie of his own. True or false?
His favourite movie of his own. When did he say this? I suppose you haven't got this information, have you?
2003.
2003. Oh, Jesus.
He was in the shower at the time, and he was just talking about his film.
You were soaping him, and you said, "This is your favorite film of all." And he just said, "That was Batman."
Yeah.
I'm gonna say yeah because I think it does feel like quite a personal film because he always involves himself with the sort of Spanish and the political elements of stuff within the fantasy. Kronos was kind of like completely different from what I can remember. Pan's Labyrinth obviously is pretty fantastical, but I can imagine this having a pretty special place in his heart. I'm going to say true.
Yes, true. According to Wikipedia, what's that website? IMDb. That's the one. According Google. To the internet movie database. Oh, right, yeah. The film's title refers to the medical condition spina sticky outer.
Spina sticky outer.
Yeah.
Is that the scientific term?
Well, is it true or false?
All right. False.
Yes, correct.
We're gonna offend sufferers of spina bifida in this podcast. That is it. I'm not listening anymore.
They can't hear from their like jars that they're trapped in. Wait, is spina bifida actually something that people suffer with, like, and live?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, so I apologize for spina bifida people.
Well, we're not making fun of it.
No.
You know, I'm sure, I mean, it's a terrible, terrible ailment.
Yes. But makes for a tasty drink. Okay. The reason for Andreas Munoz also being credited alongside Junio Valverde as Santi is because Munoz replaced Valverde in part of the underwater scenes because the other kid had to go to hospital because he had damage to his ears from filming.
Why is that funny? Oh, bloody hell!
Just because this is so like in depth. Of course, it's not.
Way too convoluted. Of course, it's true.
I was like, okay, why would I make?
Sat there making it up.
It's so specific for me to make that up.
Right, I'm going to spin you a yarn.
Okay, but now I know.
Ear damage.
Next time, I'm going to get you because there's going to be something very similar. Similarly in depth. It's going to be completely bollocks. Okay. The labor of love for director Jill was 16 years in development. True or false?
16 years. That's a long time, isn't it? But what you count as development, just like, oh, just had a notepad with it all written down.
I think so.
All right. Yeah. Let's say yes. True.
True. Okay. True. Jill wrote the film when he was in primary school. True or false?
that's got to be false, isn't it?
Well, it's true if you when you talk about primary school, you're actually referring to college because you wrote it in college.
Oh, right.
So what? False.
Yes. What did I say?
You said it was false, and it was false.
Baffled. Did I get 5 out of 5 then? I think.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
You weren't keeping score.
Yeah, well, there's only 5 questions. You could go on Mastermind with this film now, I believe. But I mean, it's pretty quite a fucking achievement that the guy who wrote it in college. It's like it's unbelievably mature and like more tasteful than most horror films are today.
Yeah. What kind of thing did you write in college?
I remember that one of the things I wrote was like Heaven is a Caravan Park. And it was about this caravan park, but like Jesus, God was the caretaker, and all these old people. It's like a sitcom, it's like a silly sitcom, and all these old people were.
Has it got canned laughter?
No, it was more like an office type thing, and you'd have like God like getting frustrated because they have to trim the hedges and that sort of. So it wasn't quite up to the snuff with old Jill's tastes.
Yeah. I see what you mean. It's awful.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. It sounds wonderful.
Okay, so I guess we've come to the part of the show where we have to rate the film.
Oh.
Out of...
Well, do we have a rating system in place?
We haven't even talked about this.
We haven't talked about a rating system. You know, this is the glue that holds the podcast together, the rating system. And, you know, we're just going to create one out, put one out of thin air, you know? I don't know if I can...
We can edit it if we go on too long. So...
Are we just gonna...
So Empire... place it in the official list. What did they? Let's just say out of 5. Or should we do Chris Stuckman's A, like grading school?
Thing? Yeah, let's do a little bit of a Chris. I think Chris Stuckman. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so all these films should be pretty like up there because if this is number 50, I've got to say this is a good start. This is a really good film.
Yeah, well, they should be pretty much up there, but you know, we might see something that we really, really just don't like.
Yeah, but I would say I think because we're starting with such a swath of good films, the pre-selected good films, at least good, we should be very, very harsh with their ratings. Do you know what I mean? Like, so if we give a film like a C, it's probably really an A. in the year it came out or whatever. But because we're going through 50s, I don't want it to be given out 50 A's.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think we will. Well, we're going to be given different ratings anyway. So.
Okay, cool. So you go first then. Go for it.
Okay. I would say Devil's Backbone, I would give it a B minus.
Okay, I'm going to give it a B plus.
B plus.
I think it's a great film. I would give it an A if it was scarier and if it was an actual horror film.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And I think it really could have been like you could have made the ghost way, like not reveal him so soon. You could have played with the tension a bit more. I think this, one of the creepiest scenes, which didn't we talk about, was when he went to get the water from the water pot place.
Yeah, yeah.
And the real sense of like, dread there. But no, I thought it was great. Like, it's an absolutely amazing film. But in terms of like horror films and what I expect a good horror film to be, it's not quite an A.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. It didn't feel like too much. I didn't expect this film really to be on this list.
Yeah.
Even though I hadn't seen it, like I kind of knew enough about it where I knew what kind of film it was going to be, especially with it being Del Toro. So yeah, the horror for me, the horror elements were a bit disappointing. I did want it to be a little bit scarier, but atmosphere-wise, it was, you know, it was creepy enough. But I think in a film where you can remove the horror elements and it's still be a good film,
yeah,
that's a good thing. But on the other side, you're like, well, why is this in the horror film list then, if that's the case?
Yeah, like Pan's Labyrinth is more fantastical, but it's still got more horror elements in it. Like I'm thinking about the bit where he beats the guy's nose, and also the
bottle,
oh my god, yeah, and the creatures as well, and they're just terrifying. So I think Pan's Labyrinth is going to be like the step up from this, but we'll see when we get there. It's way up the list.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So B minus, B plus. I think that's pretty generous.
Wait, so should we just say a B, like on average?
Average and a B. For the two of us, yeah.
Very well done, Jill. You have performed excellently. I look forward to your future works. He's also just announced that he's going to be talking about Hellboy 3, which is pretty
amazing.
That's
exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah.
He did like a Twitter poll saying, do you want to see Hellboy 3? It was like yes or hell yes.
Yeah.
And apparently like over 100,000 people voted. And I read today that he was going to be meeting with Ron Perlman and somebody else to discuss it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait for that. That'd be good.
When was the Golden Army? That was quite a few years ago.
It was a long time ago now, yeah.
I want to say like 2007, something like that.
Sounds about right.
Because Hellboy was 2004, possibly.
It's a good film as well.
I really enjoyed both the Hellboy films. And again, cogs and, you know, all that.
Yeah, it's got all that business.
All that business knocking about, GDT.
Okay, so the next film on the list is one of my favourite films ever, actually. It's Kill List by Ben Wheatley. So if you guys want to go and watch that, it's. But again, this isn't really a straight horror film. So maybe Empire, their list is like horror films that don't really play to normal horror conventions. But this film, Kill List, is great. It's fucking terrifying towards the end. So I'm looking forward to watching it again. I've really enjoyed watching this film. So before I close off the show, is there anything you want to do? Say?
Anything I want to do or say? Well, as you mentioned just then, if people want to watch Kill List after listening to this episode, and by the time the next episode comes out, you know, then you can hear our thoughts and give us your thoughts as well. And we'll give us your rating as well. Cool. Kill List.
So this show is brought to you by the story studio Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to www.hawkandcleaver.com to grab a free book. Also become a patron for early access to episodes, bonus content, and heaps of free stuff over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. This is very professional. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving a 5-star rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. And thanks to my co-host Mr. Ben Errington for being a real horror dude. You should follow him at Twitter at what's your Twitter handle?
Twitter handle is Ben_Errington.
And mine is at Luke of Condor. That's Condor with a K. Get it right.
Get it right, mate.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.